From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Since our last podcast, President Biden has nominated Thomas Day, former Postal Service Senior Vice President for Government Relations, to the Postal Regulatory Commission. Some may recall, Tom Day was the key postal official who facilitated congressional support to empower the Postal Service to protect the American public from anthrax through the mail back in the year 2001. For those who want to learn more about Tom Day and his efforts to protect us from mail contamination, you may link to the September 16th, 2022 episode of Naps Chat, where he was my guest. Mr. Day currently serves as the Chief Commercial and Financial Officer of the International Post Corporation. On September 20th, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee conducted its confirmation hearing on Tom. Commissioner Designee Day stressed his postal experience and the essential oversight role the Postal Regulatory Commission plays with regard to postal performance, service standards, accountability, and transparency. Noteworthy were the comments of Committee Chair Gary Peters, who underscored Day's operational familiarity with the Postal Service as a key quality. Chairman Peters, more importantly, stressed the importance of the Postal Regulatory Commission as a strong regulator to ensure postal accountability and transparency. The Senate committee has scheduled a vote on Tom Day's nomination for September 27th. Assuming the committee approves his nomination, both Tom and Robert Taub, who has already received unanimous committee support, will together be granted a confirmation vote by the Senate. It is expected the Senate will vote on their nomination prior to October 14th. Now let's turn our attention to this week's edition of Naps Chat. Transportation is, in all likelihood, the most indispensable element in moving mail. That is, from mail acceptance to mail delivery. A key goal of the Postal Service's 10-year strategic plan is increasing reliability and performance through the ground carriage of mail, that is, reducing air transport. In addition, we will witness over the course of the next year the deployment of thousands of electronic delivery vehicles. The new electric vehicles are intended to replace vehicles reliant on fossil fuel. So I thought it would be interesting to focus an episode of Naps Chat on the evolution of mail transportation by our country's postal system. With me today to engage in this postal road trip through American history is Lynn Heidelbaugh, curator of the ongoing Smithsonian Institution Postal Museum's exhibit entitled Moving the Mail. Lynn's research specialties include the Postal Service's operations over time. Lynn, thanks for joining me on Naps Chat today.
I'm pleased to be here, and thank you for coming down to the museum today.
Let's travel back in time to the earliest days of our nation. How was mail first transported by the infant American post office authorities, and what type of mails did the couriers transport?
In early America, the first mails were primarily business letters. It was expensive to send the mail. There was also a huge number of newspapers, also called broadsides, were in the mail as well, and that, of course, bulked it. But the main routes for the mail were back and forth to the colonies. So it was really between the new colonies and their governing countries, so mostly Great Britain. There was a lot of transatlantic mail. Between the colonies, the mail was moved mostly by foot, but also by horse and rider. And that was first done with some regularity between New York and Boston on a monthly schedule beginning in 1673.
So during the early stages of our republic, if I am, let's say I'm a small business owner and I want to send a piece of mail to a patron of mine in another city, where would I bring my mail to get it delivered?
You'd bring your mail to the post office. You would actually go to the post office yourself to pick up your mail as well. There was no home delivery. There was no deliveries to businesses until 1863 in some of the cities. But early America, you're going to your post office. The post office can take many forms. It's usually in, say, the print shop of the local printer who is printing the newspapers and also being the postmaster for the town. It was also frequently in the tavern as a gathering point where the broadsides would be available for everybody to read and you could pick up mail.
So the transport of mail was specifically between post office and post office.
That's right. Yeah. It was for those early years, there's not a huge volume of mail that needs lots of distribution. It's really a point-to-point, post-office-to-point post office. It's not until later in the 19th century do you have such a volume that you need to centralize processing the mail and bringing it to a distribution center at a hub and then bringing it back out to post offices.
Could you talk a little bit now about how mail evolved? You said it might have started by foot transport, carriage, to horseback. It evolved over time till the modern day post office. Could you just trace the way in which mail transport has evolved?
Yeah, the transportation and mail really kind of follows both what's available in new technologies for transportation as well as legislation. So it follows what has become determined by Congress of what is a post road. So for new technologies, your earliest is by foot and then by horse. Stagecoaches are allowed, contracts for stagecoaches in 1785. Then in the 1820s, steamboats become designated as post roads, meaning that contracts for carrying the mail on steamboats and navigable waterways is funded through the post office department with those contracts. Later, railways in the 1830s. And it's really the late 19th century, early 20th century, you get a real boom in different transportation methods. Everything from the new automobiles and all the forms that takes of motorcycles and trucks, as well as bicycles, trying those out in cities and trying out those sort of smaller transportation modes in cities, such as even carts or mailsters in the mid-20th century, which were those, what I call kind of adorable-looking three-wheeled vehicles, but not the most practical things that were used for delivery areas. But I've skipped a big one, which is airlines, which started with the first airmail service in 1918.
Interestingly, you know, there was experimentation with the use of Segways to deliver the mail maybe around 20 years ago. And there's talk about using drone drops of parcels. Part of the nuance of delivering the mail, of the attribute, is the face-to-face interaction between a letter carrier and the delivery person. So it doesn't really think that drone delivery will really take shape for the Postal Service.
Possibly, I think it's going to depend on really the population centers. If you are trying to deliver to a mail in a large apartment building and using those boxes in that building, you may run into a customer there. Where are you going to park your Segway on the corner while you're running into the apartment building? Where are you going to park your bike? And so much of that is done by foot. How will a drone deliver to a mailbox is something that's been experimented with.
One of the interesting things as you talk about the different modes of transport for the mail is how it partnered with the evolution of, let's say, of our interstate highway system, that as the interstate highway system was built up during the 1950s, mail started moving from railroads to the roadways, and an airline system, the airline developed probably in the 1960s to the extent, to the ubiquity that it is today. But the location of post offices, the central post office in the city, historically had been around railroad tracks.
It had. That's really followed from the late 19th century of a lot of new towns developing around railroad lines, and then the large cities where the post office department was making a decision really around the turn of the 20th century. They decided to put the post office as close to the main railway station. So you and I are sitting at the National Postal Museum, which is the former city post office of Washington, D.C., and we're right across from Union Station. This building opened in 1914 as one of those new post offices that was designed to be as close as possible to the railway line so that they could move the mail in and out as quickly as possible.
When airlines took a dominant role in the transport of mail, we created these airmail facilities, or what we in the postal biz would refer to as AMFs. Yet they were never retail operations, more so they were just processing operations, and they moved the mail elsewhere. Can you talk a little bit about these airmail facilities, how they developed, why they never developed into retail facilities?
They're really in different points within the cities. They're just outside the cities, so it's not where you're going to get a customer base coming in and out. So when I was speaking about where the Post Museum is located today in the old city post office of Washington, D.C., this is located in a residential and business area. The airline routes are not usually right downtown, and so you don't get a customer base right there at your door.
Let's talk a little bit about how the mail size, weight, characteristics determine transport of mail. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that is a big influence. And you kind of think about, oh, well, of course, it's just mail is mail, but it's not. There's so many different types of mail, and it changes radically over time. From, as I spoke about colonial, there's so many newspapers in the mail because that's what people are sending to the main way that news is moving is through the broadsides. It changes to a lot of what becomes first-class mail designation in the 19th century after the postage rate is brought down in the 1840s and 1850s so that more people are actually sending letters than they had ever been before. So you see a lot of 19th century being sort of small-sized letters, which kind of lends itself to a variety of different transportation. You don't have to think so much, are we putting this on the steamboat? Are we putting this on the stagecoach? It goes into a sack, and there it goes. One of the big challenges becomes with parcel post in 1913, and you're dealing with things of up to 70 pounds can go into a parcel and into the mail. You're dealing with things of parcels of all different shapes and sizes. And in those early years, people really didn't even know how to secure their package. So the brown paper package tied up with string often kind of ripped in the mail because nobody was really all that good at securing their early parcels. But the post office had to respond by having to carry this mail, and they ordered new wagons. They ordered new trucks just to carry parcels, parcels between post office and to post office, and to help with those distribution points within cities just for the parcels.
And in fact, today, a lot of the postal vehicles are now, the existing postal facilities are vehicles are being retrofitted to carry small parcels in contrast to mail. And the new electronic vehicles that are going to be rolled out are going to be parcel-centric, it would appear.
Yeah, and many of our parcels these days are much more standardized than they had been in previous decades of this kind of standardized packaging that helps with the machining and processing of that mail.
Your flat rate parcels makes it easier to store them on the vehicles as they go out to the along the delivery routes, clearly.
It does. It helps at every point along the processing and delivery.
Let me ask you this question. There is an absolute difference between transporting mail intercity versus intra-city. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so between cities, you're really looking at more long-haul mail. So you're looking at mail that is gathered into the sacks and trays, and you have to move a great volume of that mail. So that's what's going on to stagecoaches, what's going on railroads, trucks, on the plains. What's happening in the city is a kind of a different, whole different game to try to get yourself through a busy city street. There's different obstacles. The traffic around you is moving at different rates. Much of that is distributing the mail post office to post office, but also then all the routes for the carriers. So how do you get that mail then to the carriers as well? So in the early days of the early 20th century, they started to put distribution boxes on the streets where the trucks would, carriers would bring the mail out in trucks and leave it at the distribution box, and then letter carriers would pick it up for their next part of their rounds. So that was one way that they deployed both that combination of trucks and people to just to get through the city streets. And many cities, in the particularly in the Northeast and Midwest, in the early 20th century, started pneumatic tube lines to get that mail post office to post office and to avoid that traffic right on the city streets and avoid all what at that time was slow-moving horses carrying buggies still and people that were still learning to drive these new things called cars.
As there, interestingly, I was talking with one of my colleagues, one of my national officers over at the National Association of Postal Supervisors. He was reminiscing about when they were digging up the streets of Manhattan, they would find the pneumatic tubes that would carry mail maybe from the General Post Office over to Lenox Hill Post Office and how the mail got from point A to point B. I was just curious. I mean, I was musing with him about the pressure, because it runs by air pressure, pushing items through a tube, the amount of pressure that had to be generated to move mail among the tubes in Manhattan.
Yeah, I've seen photographs of the machinery just for that air, and it looks like a room size kind of equipment that was just getting this mail just moving through those tubes. And we're fortunate enough to have one of the canisters from New York City that's on exhibit here at the museum.
So the mail was put in a canister that was the mail didn't move singly through the system. It was put in a canister to move through the pneumatic tubes around Manhattan.
That's right, and it's a fairly large canister. If you've seen those pneumatic tubes and in some of those teller windows where you drive up to at a bank or hospitals use pneumatic tubes to move documents within a large building, these are like 5 times, 10 times that size. This is a pretty massive kind of looking canister. It's bigger than a bread box. It's like 3 bread boxes because you're moving a number of pieces of mail in each of those canisters.
Over the evolution of the postal system's transport system, how much did emphasis was placed on speed to get mail from point A to point B? Was that a major factor in determining what is the mode of transport?
It is. Speed really factors into what the Post Office Department is building an expectation, a sense of reliability with their customer base. So if their customers are starting to expect their mail to be delivered, you know, from one end of the nation in a certain amount of days. And they're also, particularly in the early 20th century, while they're experimenting with the airmail service, they're setting up a transcontinental route in the early 1920s. They're trying to show how quickly the mail can move, and like never before. It's really trying to build on that sense of progress of the early 20th century, and the Post Office Department is using that as both a kind of moving themselves forward, but also building reputation for the speed of the mail and how this information moves, how the messages move, how the goods that you're trying to get from point to point, how quickly you can get that into the hands of customers.
As you wander around the Postal Museum, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a couple of minutes, you follow the evolution of the mail transport system. You know, as you said, the walking between Boston and New York, although I think it was probably more efficiently done on a horseback, stagecoach. You might use a ferry boat up and down the Hudson River between Albany and New York. You got the railroads, and it's a trajectory of quicker delivery. and mail gets more complex as a different mail mix. Cross-continental mail was done by air. The Delivering for America plan now seems to be, and I dare say, regressing back from air transport and making it more of a ground transport. How do you, as a historian, view that reverse trajectory?
Some of it is the call for what is in the mail, dealing with that. Those parcels is different when considering putting that on an airline versus putting it on a trailer. If you are dealing with a change of customer expectations of when they need certain mail pieces, when they are expecting to get their letters, their packages, their periodicals, people's expectations have changed a lot in recent years about when their mail arrives.
Also, during the early part of our American history, probably up until fairly recently, the Postal Service didn't really have competition for the movement of mail. Parcels, yes, as you enter into the 20th century, but not for mail and periodicals. Do you think that's as a historian, I'm asking you now, is that something novel?
There was a really big debate in the 1830s and 1840s. What is the mail monopoly on, particularly that the letter mail? There were, in cities, there were courier companies, express companies delivering letters. Post Office Department took a number of these to court, and finally it's established that the Post Office Department has a monopoly on moving those letters within the cities, making those deliveries. So some of that competition has always been around, and it's interesting to see today's competition in light of looking at the history.
Also today, and I don't know historically if this was an issue other than I recall when the Postal Department was seeking to market the Pony Express, which wasn't really run by the post office, that was a contract, but the safety and the comfort of the people who actually deliver the mail. And now as we're designing vehicles for delivery, we're talking more about air conditioning and safety devices. Has that been an issue historically, the safety of the postal vehicles?
It has. It's been a safety issue for the vehicles, for the material on the vehicles, but and the workers themselves. The railways are an example to look at. The early railway mail cars were typically just behind the coal cars, just behind the engine. And these could be a really hazardous place to work. If there was an explosion on the steam train, very often that, you know, third car down would be the mail car, and that would take a brunt of the blast. Over the years, they moved from wooden mail cars to steel mail cars, protecting the workers inside and protecting the mail. So that's a big evolution of trying to protect people and the mail in that condition. But also over time, as routes change, typically are getting longer and longer. The hours of working delivery routes have been long over the years. They've been studied for rural free delivery. When they were first setting up those rural routes in the early 20th century, they were out driving those routes and figuring out how many miles and how many residents they could fit on one route. So those were measured in odometers, and they went out and then assigned carriers to those. That was considered, like, how long within a day would people be working? Would that be from dusk to dawn? And so those are kind of considerations as well. You know, are you working at the earliest light to late light? This is out there in the dark of early 20th century, where you don't have the ambient light of cities. So those are kind of considerations that were given. What they're given now is still routes are very long, going from potentially dusk to dawn, but all different kind of weather conditions. And so the more that you can bring in some of that safety and comfort and all handling all those different weather conditions and factors, it will increase efficiency, will increase the safety for the workers.
Let's look into the future if we can. As we know, The past is prologue. Do you have any predictions about future modes of mail transportation?
Yeah, so that's a great setup of, yes, I'm a historian, so I'll look at it from that historical perspective. But what has always continued to exist is those surprising modes of transportation you think would have been phased out by now. I think we often hear cited is the mule train that makes its way to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and serving the Havasupai Reservation. There may be routes that will have to have foot traffic too. It all depends on where people are living, where population centers change, how we might be changing our residences or how we are conducting business. And the infrastructure, the transportation modes will be part of that equation. But I think what is also going to be a pretty steady constant in those factors are we're always looking towards speed and the sense of time. We're looking to efficiency of resources. But I'm still curious about whether there'll be drones and you know, we were always promised jetpacks in my generation, so let's see if we'll get some jetpacks someday.
It's like the Jetsons era.
That's right.
For those who remember the comic, the TV comic, the Jetsons. I remember when I was in college being present for a lecture done by Isaac Asimov, the famous science fiction writer, and he was talking about mail in space. Can you envision a future where you have the space colonized by human beings and us having space rocket ships or spaceships that carry mail?
Well, they've certainly have worked with rockets before in the 1950s and carrying mail on those, and it has gone to space, mostly all commemorative pieces. But I could see, we'll have to see where the future of colonies in space go and how communication works on those colonies.
So final question. I want to give you the opportunity to promote Moving the Mail, the Moving the Mail exhibit here at the Postal Museum. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, and that is in our atrium space when you come into the what has been the City Post Office of Washington, D.C. And it's a you can see all the variety that we've spoken about today, from the airplanes, from the earliest from 1911, to you can wander into the train car and see how mail was processed into pigeonholes while the train moved. You can see everything from the early 1900s truck to what we're used to seeing today still is the LLV is on view. And one of my favorites is the dog sled from Alaska used by a father and son with a mail contract. They use that during the winter months.
I want to thank Lynn, curator at the Smithsonian Institution Postal Museum, for joining me on this week's Naps Chat. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Bob.
Now, for those of you out there in podcast land, if you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more important, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and be safe.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make